You're listening to Fintechs, eh? A podcast that explores the innovations and challenges in Canada's fintech landscape. My name is Sue Britton. I'm the CEO of Firefly Growth and an entrepreneur with over 30 years of experience in the financial industry. I also serve on the FinPay Committee, and I'm an advisor for Holt Exchange. Join us as we sit down with industry leaders, trailblazers, and pioneers to discuss their journey, the evolution of fintech, and what's next for Canada's ever-dynamic fintech ecosystem.
Well, welcome to another edition of Fintechs A, and I'm pleased to introduce Dave Rowe. Dave is joining us from a beautiful part of the world, the UK. I aspire to maybe even live there at some point, actually. I've only been a couple of times, but Dave is a chief operating officer at Paramount Commerce, and welcome, Dave.
Thank you. Great to be here.
I'm thrilled to get to know more about Paramount Commerce. I've heard about the company quite a bit, and you're, I think, a well-known entity in the Canadian market. But why don't you actually tell us a little bit about your story, and then the story behind Paramount. How you and they came to be.
Sure. So I've now been working in the payments industry for over 20 years. I actually joined one of the first companies that now became the PaySafe Group back in 2002. Obviously, very different times back then, both in terms of the payment landscape, also the way that e-commerce has now boomed, the kind of the money that was available then to start companies and sustain them. I stayed there for just over 13 years. Then not too long after that, joined Paramount Commerce, where I've now been for just over 6 years. I think talking about the kind of Paramount journey, almost two decades, or just over two decades now, has been in business, and started by two co-founders based out of Toronto. And they really saw a gap in the market where the traditional or then traditional ways of payment were not offering the right user experience or low acceptance of payments. We're able to launch like their first product to market, enabling end users to pay from their bank account to online merchants. We are the first company to kind of do that, independent company, let's say. Over the years, we've launched various different payment products in the market to various different industries. Also operated in Europe for some time, also south of the border in the US until we sold that company. Now we're pretty much 100% focused on the Canadian market. We still have two flagship products in the market, one based on the Interact rails and the other on EFT, but offering all kinds of value-added services around them. I think the key to our success has really been taking these kind of payment rails and making them work in different scenarios, different use cases, adding value, and ensuring that consumers can pay the way they want to, low friction, easy methods of payment, and merchants get their payments quickly and at the right price point, which is obviously always important.
It's super interesting. I love the way you put that. Friction in the user experience is such a an easy, sort of concept to get your head to sort of understand why innovation happens, right? If you can't do something, then we find a way to make a payment in a way that we want. If companies like Paramount Commerce are around, but just the like using payment rails and, getting the payment, making the payment in the way in which users need to, or merchants need to, or what have you, has been such an area of innovation in in the market globally, really. Mm-hmm. Are there use cases that Paramount kind of started with that were, you know, still kind of known for, or specific industries that you're prevalent in?
Yeah, sure. So our kind of business started off in the iGaming industry, enabling consumers, players to fund their gaming accounts. And I've worked, iGaming has always been a part of my experience throughout my career. And I think that it's one of those industries that really pushes the boundaries in terms of payments because it's so important to them. And it's not just about consumers being able to pay to merchants, but also receiving money back again. So you're kind of on both sides of that. There's also a certain element of risk associated with these kinds of transactions. So that those two components of balancing that risk and also ensuring that high conversion and being a real partner with those merchants is very important. And a lot of the merchants that operate in the iGaming space are global companies that a lot of them are public companies operating in multiple markets. So it's certainly in a lot of cases, you know, you're going through that really enterprise sale, enterprise relationship. It's a very demanding space as well. So that's where Paramount kind of got started with in the early days. You know, we've sought to diversify the business both geographically and also into different verticals, like, for example, online remittance, enabling online remittance players to receive and send payments to and from Canada. More recently, we've acquired a company that is focused on areas such as bill payment and collections and things like that. And I feel like this is also one of those areas that has somewhat been underserved by the more traditional payments, not having the kind of capabilities that those industries require. The use cases are fairly unique, which only the kind of real payment geeks really understand, because it's like, oh, you're just moving money from one place to another. But there's always a lot of the devil is in the detail in terms of what those use cases really require, and to ensure that consumers are able to pay one way or another.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, interesting. I haven't kept up to date, sort of super current on the bill payment space, but it, you know, in a traditional sense, you know, paying your bills from your online banking or what have you has been a space dominated by just a few solutions historically in Canada. Yeah. I know this is not on the script, but obviously you guys have had some pretty key relationships with sponsor banks to help you, you know, get access to the EFT or Interac systems in Canada. Has that always been a stable, you know, sort of part of your operation? I ask that specifically because, you know, historically we've had, you know, fintechs. You mentioned that you're doing business with big global companies, so you would likely be familiar with, you know, when you do business with big companies, you have to be, you know, pretty solid in terms of your infrastructure and your operations and your security. And but historically fintechs have had trouble with those stable relationships with sponsoring banks. Is that what's your journey been like?
I think, you know, going back to my earlier career, the big kind of shockwaves that went through the market was around 2008 with the credit crunch, and there were banks that just suddenly decided they just didn't want to get involved in any kind of fintech activity, even if you were actually a very good customer of theirs. They just looked at it and said, not worth our risk anymore. I think there's been some warming over the years. It's kind of gradual, and as there's been more competition, not so much in Canada, but I think in Europe specifically, there have been more banks with an appetite to support fintechs for sure. In Canada, we always seek to have redundancy. So I'm not going to sit here and say that we've never had to part ways with a processing bank, but it's always been part of our kind of normal standard course of business to continue to develop and grow our banking relationships. It's also important to have a mixture of them as well, because, you know, some of the bigger banks are not necessarily as innovative as the smaller ones. So there are capabilities and opportunities that you can work with to, you know, deliver better services to both the consumers and the merchants, depending on who the bank is. It's not easy to maintain that, but it's something that we've been working with it for 2 decades now, effectively. So And for a new company coming into the market, it's definitely, I imagine, more of a struggle to, you know, knock on the door of especially the larger banks and say, oh, can we start processing EFT or Interac or whatever?
Yeah.
I'm sure that's quite a challenge.
Yeah, and who knows, that, you know, at some point in the future, maybe that will change with some of the, you know, announced regulatory changes. But and with that in mind, maybe in terms of what you see in the market, you know, in terms of, you know, trends or changes in terms of either innovation or new entrants, what are you most excited about? And how is Paramount positioning itself around those, you know, trends to grow?
Sure. So I think there's a few things that we see in the space. I mean, one thing that we're excited about, but wish it would come sooner, is real-time rails. is certainly one of our products that is running on the EFT rails would certainly benefit from that. Also, you know, and ultimately the customers. So, you know, money moving from their bank account when they hope it will. And
instantly, yes.
Something I've been used to a while over this side of the Atlantic. But there's certainly a lot of benefits to that. Also, you know, money going the other way as well, right? So B2C payments as well. And at the right price point. Although we've built up a very strong core competence around managing risk with EFT, I think that there can be cost savings all around with once real time rails do come to market, and we're more than ready for that change to happen when it does come. I think the other area is around, you know, AI and machine learning. Although AI has not really it's not necessarily so end user facing about what the benefits are. We see it more in the back office. Just to make things more efficient, also handling operational processes quicker, and just streamlining, you know, a lot of things around, especially around how we manage, for example, you know, incoming queries from customers and all the whole support side of things. That's where we see some advances there. And then with machine learning, we've been utilizing it for some time now. Especially around fraud and risk management. That has made a significant difference to our ability to manage payment risk, and, you know, really significant reduction in any kind of fraud that we see. and at the same time having a very low kind of false positive rate has been a massive improvement to what we already had built in terms of a very substantial risk management capability. So those are two of the areas that we've seen great trends in.
And with AI and, using, process automation, like, I guess, what would you do alternatively if you couldn't do that?
I think what it has done is that it's allowed us to focus our efforts and resources more in a more structured way. I mean, we're a people business, right? There's not a big warehouse and machinery and so on that is powering our business. So, we certainly in payments. One of the key things is scale, and it's really helped us to scale in a lot of areas, and but that's really the area that we, in terms of AI, is what we've been able to accomplish.
Interesting. I'd love to talk more about that. It's funny because we're I think part of the big challenge in Canada is a lot of the companies that haven't dealt with their technology or sort of process automation as a either technology or manual processes are really struggling to get caught up. And I can speak from, recent experience that it's interesting that you even say that you're, a people business, because, most people would probably think of you as a technology business, but I get what you're saying. It's people that, make sure that the technology works. So very interesting perspectives, depending on sort of where you're coming from. So let's talk about the real-time rail for a bit. I certainly hope that that's something that we'll hear more about soon in terms of, Payments Canada and their progress, getting out of their analysis phase, whatever it was that's gone wrong that they've, had to, twice now, put a bunch of expensive consultants against figuring out how to fix. And I say, I don't really mean to be disparaging. It's just frustrating as, as someone in the ecosystem, not knowing, what's really going to transpire. But and I think I read something from Alex recently on, the changes in the Payments Act. That's something that seems like it's moving, forward. And and then of course you've got the payment service providers, and the RPAA. All of those things coming together when at some point in the future. So obviously you guys would be a payment service provider. So under the RPAA, you'd be supervised there by the Bank of Canada. Do you think that you'll go, for being a direct RTR participant? Is that something that you can talk about, or have you contemplated that far? I'm sure you have.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a big question around those types of decisions is volume and scale. What we've seen over the years as we've, as a company, as we've offered more Interac-based solutions, that because of the end user recognition that Interac has, that a lot of end users have kind of chosen to go down that route and chosen that when it comes to the checkout. At the same time, there are limitations with Interac. So that's why other products that we have exist, both for not just payment but also for data services. So having being able to do things like verifying the the name of the user, ensuring that they do have access to a bank account, and that gives additional comfort for some merchants. There are also opportunities with the rich data that you can get from online banking, even pre-open banking, which I know is another hot topic in Canada from a payments perspective. We're very excited about the opportunities that are already there with data products that we're in the process of launching, but also with open banking, what the future holds. We have some experience in as I said earlier in the discussion, in Europe, where we kind of went through that transition to open banking, which was a little bit bumpy to say the least, but I think that with everything that's been learned elsewhere in the world, we hope that that Canada will learn from those. Going back to your point, I think that it will very much depend on the types of volumes, and I think there's also still a little bit of uncertainty about the kind of mechanics of real-time rails, like how exactly it's going to work. If you look at the progress, or you could say lack of, south of the border in some respects to RTP and FedNow, it's like, great, you have this real-time payment system that works between the banks, but then there's not the kind of infrastructure and mechanics around it to make it so usable. I think as always with payments, the devil's in the detail. From a technology and so on perspective, we're ready to grasp it. But depending on what it actually looks like on the tin, then we can work out what some of the use cases are, what some of the limitations potentially are, how much we can actually use it versus what we currently do with EFT and also with Interac e-transfer. So time will tell on that one for sure.
And Interac has gone through some pretty transformative changes lately with their new CEO and several new members of their executive team, and I hear a lot of sort of new thinking coming from some of their executives, and I wonder if what your observations have been as you've been watching that over the last 6 months or so. Like, are you seeing Interac kind of, changing its positioning in the market, or given that they're, one of the, important rails that you use, what are your thoughts?
We've always had a very good relationship with our relationship manager, at Interac. As volume has grown, I think it's definitely if we look at when we first launched Interac, there was still this kind of Interac Online solution that was still kind of hanging on in the market, and it obviously still started to sunset it. I think that they've probably seen some of the volume that's being processed by the likes of Paramount and others in the market, like the third-party payment processor space. And we're like, okay, there's still definitely opportunity there for consumer to merchant and back again kind of payments. And we've seen little snippets of innovation just in recent months and so on. For example, you can now send an e-transfer to using bank details, so you're not just relying on email address, which gets around some of the auto deposit or not challenges that exist on Interac, which are more from a P2P perspective, right? If a corporate entity wants to send you money, they want to send you money, they don't want you to accept or reject it. Kind of.
What was my password again? Yeah, I know.
Yeah, all of that kind of thing. Even before that, I think that some of the user experience improvements they made around request for money and things like that have definitely made a difference. So we're excited about what's coming next from Interac. We see still great progress and also opportunity there with Interac Rails. Like I said, especially around these new use cases that we are talking to different companies about that are struggling to find ways to whether it be collections, whether it be for top ups of different kinds, and also making it more not just user friendly, but also having a way to make it automated on their side as well, so they're not struggling to kind of reconcile payments, payments flying in this way and that way, and I think there's definitely. There's definitely a lot of scope for these different use cases that we see.
Interesting, eh? The thing about Interac, which is, sort of its, brilliant, innovation from so early, right, to launch e-transfer in the Canadian market, but then also a bit of its curse in some ways now because, I think Interac, I think limitation, there's a limitation with how much I can do. And my friends at Interac are going to kill me for this, but it's true. If you need to move money, and you haven't found alternative ways to do it, which ultimately are probably using EFT or bill payment or something like that, as a workaround, you're kind of stuck. And even moving money between accounts is just sometimes crazy, depending on where you have to get your money from. But it's interesting though, isn't it? Like, it's all just moving money, and the bank's policies or the financial institutions, sort of set of regulations that or policies rather that limit them from changing those rules. What are your thoughts on that? Because like it does seem to me like if you were to up the Interac e-transfer limit to $10,000, would that solve the majority of the problems? At least for consumers, maybe not in other use cases, but it just seems like, okay, we know the technology exists, the ability is out there. But yet we think we need to, we need to limit people.
I think what we have seen is that the banks seem to be kind of somehow cherry picking users that they're giving bigger limits to. There doesn't seem to be some kind of widespread, okay, everyone's going to get a limit increase with Interac. They seem to be, some way kind of just dipping their toes in the water a little bit to see kind of what happens. To lean on my European experience and also especially UK, it's kind of a similar thing there, although it happened a little quicker. Because when faster payment came out and the limit was quite low, and it kind of just gradually goes bigger. Maybe you've seen a similar thing with contactless card payments in Canada,
right,
when it first came out. And I think that as a payment rail or method of payment becomes more mature, there's that learning period around risk is required. Mm-hmm. And I think maybe one of the challenges that from an Interac perspective they're facing is that if you compare to other jurisdictions, they're only just bringing out payment regulation now in mm-hmm. Canada, right? Mm-hmm. So
yeah.
Paramount Commerce as a business, we've always had built a competence and continually innovated in the risk management space. And part of that was because we had regulators when we were operating in the US with state money transmitter licenses and so on. And we had regulation in Europe because all payment services are regulated for, since a long time. There's always been a when you're operating in that space, there's from a payment rail perspective, and Interac is fairly unique in terms of that compared to in other yeah. countries. Without that kind of cohesive approach to managing the risk from whether it's the banks, whether it's a merchant, whether it's a payment provider, maybe that's a big factor for them. I think that some of the things that we see from our side, regardless of the vertical or industry that the merchant is operating in, you always get bad actors. If you're taking a risk averse approach from a rail perspective, then increasing the limit is only going to increase your exposure to those to those bad actors. So I hear what you're saying. You know, the increasing the limits will certainly help all of the vast majority of good users.
Exactly.
This is the world we live in.
I know. It's interesting though, because I don't know that. I don't hear a ton of people talk about, you know, just some of the things that could be done that could, you know, improve the experience quickly for people. And and you know, even during the pandemic, the change from, I think, the top limit, at least from an Interac debit perspective, was $100 for most. Or, you know, anyway, it's, and then, it, you know, even with the credit card, and then it increased to $250 that you could tap with. And now it appears as though it depends who your bank is or what type of account you have, to your point about cherry picking. And it's, I kind of feel like you just sort of said, you know, with more regulation will come more, you know, sort of collective cohesiveness of the system as it relates to these topics. Whereas right now it's a little bit up to, you know, each individual institution. And that's interesting. Kind of leads to maybe a question, maybe two down. Like, how do you approach balancing, you know, the need for innovation, security, and, you know, compliance in this sector, in fintech?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think leaning on what I said before, because we've worked in different jurisdictions, we've always complied with different regulations, and we haven't sort of we run our Canadian business without regulation and our other businesses with. The whole business just runs the same and you make little tweaks depending. So for us, we've always treated our compliance obligations with utmost importance. And we've often worked with regulators to some way sort of mold how the industry wants to actually implement something. It's always sort of fairly difficult for regulators when they're introducing something new, and to actually collaborate with the industry just makes life so much easier. You know, because sometimes it's not clear how something that they think is a good idea actually plays out. Like, what are the actual implications of something like that? Safeguarding is probably a good example of that, right? Mm-hmm. safeguarding has gone through various iterations in European regulation. And what does it really mean? What are the mechanics around that? What is actually possible with different banks, or you know, what we call challenger banks versus the bricks and mortar banks, you know. So I think from a compliance perspective, we've always been very proactive in our approach there. Similar situation with security, you know, especially our kind of the security around our technology. You know, we're SOC 2 compliant, for example. We have various, systems and procedures and processes in place. Our chief security officer is always keeps us very, very honest. And I think that as an exec team, you have to, it's sometimes it's not so much a balancing act. It's kind of like, these are the things that are, the table stakes for being in this business, in this industry. And sometimes, you know, it's not necessarily a question of should we do this security thing versus something related to, I don't know, user experience or something like that.
Right.
The security things
have
always got to get done, and it's around kind of worked about how you kind of work around that. And sometimes how you implement something around security or compliance can actually give you a competitive advantage, because it requires you to innovate. It requires you to think about how do we comply with this and still offer a great user experience.
Interesting.
So
yeah.
it's sometimes there's a silver lining to these things. Put my product hat on for a second.
Yeah. Well, you can make a product so much better by innovating. You know, like a lot of your risk policies, right?
Absolutely.
Oh, and using, you know, automation. Well, switching gears a little bit. So what's in store for us in the future? I guess when you think of your customers or their customers, merchants, consumers, what do you think the future of payment solutions is going to look like?
So I think there's a few things. I think from a merchant point of view, from the kind of experience that we are seeing at the moment, that, you know, the merchants are really keen on reducing their transaction costs, the kind of solutions there that, you know, that exist around bank-based payments and being able to really still offer a great experience for end users are extremely important to kind of fulfill some of those needs. The second thing is around what's typically branded as kind of this embedded finance, right? You know, if we look at the kind of traditional way that a payment exists on a checkout or in a payment kind of journey, you've typically got these kind of handoffs, right, from a merchant to some kind of third party that will go away and kind of execute the payment. And I think that as merchants continue to get more sophisticated and want to be able to offer different types of use cases to buy things and so on, that having the merchant having more control over that payment, whether it be a bank-based payment, a card-based payment, buy now, pay later, or whatever, that having that more seamless user experience is getting more and more important. And you know, some of the solutions that we are working on really kind of lend themselves to that. So I think those are two of the big things that we kind of see in the future.
And are there any of the you mentioned, you know, like, you know, some of your some of your clients are big global players. Like, is there, are the global players who obviously maybe, you know, from a merchant standpoint, don't necessarily want to implement, you know, a ton of unique, you know, geographic specific capabilities. Are they, are any of those merchants bringing, you know, pushing and bringing some of that new technology or new experiences to countries they operate in, like Canada?
I think it depends on the merchant. It actually does depend on the merchant. I mean, we see that for those which are entering Canada for the first time and are unsure about the size of the market for them, how much marketing end user acquisition they're going to be spending on, that kind of thing. I think using third-party payment aggregators, gateways, PSPs, whatever you want to call it, is usually the best way in, right? They've got that PSP that's integrated into their platform already, and they see that, okay, I can get, let's say, for example, an Interact solution through Gateway X, and Paramount Commerce is the ultimate provider of that. I don't need to do a heavy lift to do the integration, which, you know, is still today, you know, one of the, it's probably the, not necessarily the biggest hurdle to get across from a sales perspective, it's just the biggest hurdle from a timeline perspective, right? Mm-hmm. You know, merchants will be typically very sold on a solution, but then finding the development resources internally to get the job done is typically the hard part. Because they're juggling multiple different things, as every company is. So that's what we see with maybe new market entrants that aren't too sure. But what we've also seen from those exact same types of merchants is that once the volume goes to a certain size, and time passes, that they prefer to have a direct integration. Yeah. And one of the main reasons for that is that gateways are also global companies with lots of priorities. And as we, Paramount, develop more and more solutions around the features and so on, they struggle to maintain that, having always the best-in-class solution that's integrated into their gateway. So it's kind of just to, you know, it's once it becomes big enough, then they will do a direct integration and bypass the gateway itself.
Interesting.
As I said before, the bigger players that are already in the market that want to have another payment method and they understand the importance of it, then they will typically find the resources to do it themselves. And you know, we as a business, we always try and make that integration as seamless as possible. You know, having a dedicated team for them to get them through that. Through that process, it's still work for them to do, and it competes with all of their internal priorities.
And with fraud being such a big, you know, concern, I wonder if we talked a little bit about this being an area of focus for you guys, of course. But did you want to talk a bit about, you know, how Paramount Commerce approaches, you know, your fraud prevention and detection and response systems? Like, what's your kind of unique, you know, sort of special sauce in that regard?
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, I think it's safe to say that, you know, over the last, it's probably especially the last 10 years, the technology and the processes around fraud prevention, transactional risk management, and so on has changed drastically. You know, I still remember, you know, probably 15 years ago, you know, you'd need like armies of analysts reviewing so-called suspicious transactions and things like that. You know, a lot of that has now shifted to almost 90% automation. You know, going from what were also quite static rules to such an increased amount of flexibility. And for us, it kind of starts, first of all, with the merchant, like really understanding who are the merchant's customers. What does a typical transaction look like for that merchant? And then when it comes to actually when they go live and start processing, every transaction that we see helps us to build a picture and a pattern around, okay, these are the types of customers that we're seeing from this merchant. We take a lot of different data points. We have flexibility around, limits and velocities and all of those kinds of things. And we also work with the merchants in some cases to kind of tweak those rules. The great thing about being in business for 20 years in the same country is that you also have quite a substantial library of bad actors.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
if we see someone being misbehaving in one in a transaction with one merchant, then the likelihood is they're still going to do the same with another. We certainly maintain all of those lists in a proactive way. And then I think, as we touched on earlier, the most recent piece of the puzzle has been the introduction of machine learning, which kind of, again, takes all of those data points, basically learns how to use them over time. So the models that we've been able to develop and that continue to develop just keep improving and improving and improving what we call our kind of hit rates, reducing our false positives and ultimately reducing the any kind of fraudulent activity that we see. And going back to your point earlier about processing banks and banking relationships, without that, that you put those relationships in jeopardy because they don't want to be dealing with these any kind of fraud cases and things like that. And then from a people perspective, going back to what I was saying earlier about having an army of analysts, now you have a group of data scientists who are working primarily with the tools just continually improving. What's possible. What we've also started to do is working closely with some of the merchants is to offer them additional services that can help them, not just with the payments that we're processing, but for other things as well, whether it be onboarding of customers, whether it be continually reviewing transactions, being able to give them the heads up about a potential risky customer without necessarily getting in the way of the payment, and then they can kind of do their own due diligence on that user. I think when you're on the payment side, you're always slightly one step removed from that direct kind of customer engagement. But I don't think it doesn't absolve you from having that responsibility to be proactive and identify potential risks. So, as I said a few times, it's a really core competence for us. It's something that we invest a lot of time and money and effort into, can really be make a big difference in the market.
Well, I think that's important. I think that's come through loud and clear since the beginning of this conversation. That's a key attribute of Paramount overall. Not just solving for that payment experience that perhaps maybe you're limited to, without a company like yours, but also knowing that you've got, a solid organization who knows how to run, and manage risk in your operations is pretty key. So let's maybe wrap things up and look out to, you know, kind of what does Paramount Commerce look like in the future? Like what are some of the things that, you know, you're looking at, you know, whether it's this year, next year, you know, I mean, it's hard to look out too far ahead in our, you know, rapidly changing world. I'd like to think it's rapidly changing, but Canada maybe a lot less so than, you know, your from your vantage point. But yeah, what are some of the things that you that you're looking to achieve at Paramount in the coming future?
Yeah, sure. So as a business, we're still 100% focused on account-to-account payments and experiences around account-to-account payments. We're not, although we have been tempted, we haven't got distracted by, you know, card processing or buy now, pay later or something like that. We'd happily do some of the payments for buy now, pay later, but we're not looking to be the next Klarna or anything like that.
Yeah,
that's not on our, that's not on
probably
our,
a good
on
idea.
Our radar. I mean, there have been some success stories there, but
oh, for sure.
But anyway,
I'm a yeah. Go keep going.
Yeah. you know, we are. There's a few areas that we're focused on. One is continued kind of expansion from an industry perspective. So taking our kind of presence beyond the kind of gaming digital commerce side of things and into other markets. For example, we are integrated into Shopify. So it's having
awesome.
That kind of e-commerce angle is very exciting for us. Also, some of the other plugins into some of the other shop systems, Magento, etc. And then, you know, building on some of the success we've had with some of the large telcos around, you know, collections, the lending sectors, card top ups, things like that. And you know, we also think that it's similar with any industry. If you're able to onboard and go live with one of the big fish in any industry, then you can, there's a kind of domino effect that you can kind of take out. So, you know, we are in some exciting discussions with some, you know, some of the large kind of brands operating in Canada to be a payment method on the checkout. And
awesome.
I think that this will be huge for us, and we can really kick on from there. The second area is around kind of product diversification. So, you know, we talked before about you know, how we've continued to develop payment capabilities, you know, we're very excited to be launching a kind of data product solution that will facilitate different use cases, from onboarding, risk management, gaining customer insights during the payment journey. Also, we're about to launch with a marquee merchant to kind of verify a customer for like a one-way payment to a customer. So they didn't pay originally to the merchant. It's just a one-way payment out. So we're kind of building out solutions so that they can verify that the customer is who they say they are, that they own their bank account, that they, and if they did want to make a payment later on, they can kind of, it's a tokenized solution and so on. So, so this is another thing that we've been working towards as well. So again, linked to bank-based payments, but being able to offer different kind of solutions. The third area is really around partnerships. We're very happy with our progress with banks, and for example, we launched with Flinks, the product not too long ago, we have several other partnerships in the mix to work with. From some of them on the risk side of things, others to more like go-to-market partners, platforms, that kind of thing. And of course, banks. It's very important for us to continue to kind of develop that side of things. Bringing all of these things together is really about continuing to offer best-in-class payment experiences for our customers, staying ahead of the competition where we can, and being able to offer payment services for these different use cases that present themselves, and we continue to be a nimble company. We're still relatively small. I think that's where you can really kind of set yourself apart from the market, which is often much larger companies that have a lot more competing priorities, different jurisdictions that they're working in, whereas we're still absolutely focused on Canada at this moment in time, and can be nimble, can react to, if XYZ customer needs something, then we can make the necessary changes from a roadmap perspective and get it done, whereas it's not always possible for some of our competition. So that's a very important part of it.
Very cool. Very cool. I learned a lot today. I'm glad to have met you. I wonder if someone's looking to, kind of reach out with regard to, some interest in partnering, or maybe, a new customer looking to chat with you, what's the best way to connect with Paramount?
They can either reach out to me directly on LinkedIn or whatever, or direct me through the website. We have a direct sales channel through there. Our sales team are very, very open to new opportunities, as you can imagine. So
ParamountCommerce.com
is the place for the best to go. I'm not the best salesperson, so it's best to go.
Hey, that was pretty good, though. No, that was pretty good. It was quick and not rehearsed, so you know your stuff. Thank you so much, Dave. I really appreciate the opportunity to meet you and to learn more about Paramount Commerce. And I wish you guys continued success. And enjoy our lovely spring. Thank goodness.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your time. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye.
Thanks for joining us. Looking for more insights? Visit us at fintechscanada.ca or follow us on LinkedIn. We'll see you next time for more on Canada's latest fintech innovations.